Kathy Williams.
Let's get it cracking. 4 o'clock standing tall, feeling good here on a Thursday. Yours truly, C. Williams, sitting in the box. Yeah. Nick Nice, he's got the dishes, the ones and twos. Plenty to get to today. Ken Thompson at Ken Thompson 87. He's going to join us at the bottom of the hour, looking at game number 3 in the World Series. Thursday night football coming up tonight. Key games in week 8, also college football. Dope. Lighters up at 420 and that final go round after that. Also, talk about the NBA. Some other interesting things. The year of the backup quarterback. All that other good stuff. Nick, how are you, brother?
I'm great, man. I'm always great when I get to come back here and do the show with you.
It's a lot of fun. Just hanging out, having a good time. And breaking news right off the top. We'll get to that. And then, of course, from there, I want to talk a little bit about the World Series and some things going on with the NBA, China, things of that nature.
Drama.
Yep. Breaking news. This drama, too. And I had a feeling this was coming. I didn't think they would do it during the World Series, but we don't even get to Game 3. And the Astros have fired general manager Brandon Taubman for conduct that does not, quote, reflect the values of the organization, according to a team statement released today. Stephanie Epstein of Sports Illustrated published a report on Monday revealing that Taubman had taunted 3 female reporters about the Astros signing closer Roberto Osuna, who was suspended for 75 games last season for violating the MLB domestic violence policy as the team celebrated its ALCS victory over the Yankees. Now, according to the report, Taubman yelled, blank, quote, "Thank God we got Osuna. I'm so frogging glad we got Osuna," unquote. Okay, then he went on after reports got back to management and denied it, but there were 3 female reporters and there were other people that came to support Epstein. Listen, when you got power, this is very unfortunate, but you take a lot of just common people and don't give them power, and they're good people. It's unfortunate that when you give certain people power and the glamour life and the road and I'm a rock star, I could do this, I got the key to the city, I could do whatever I want, and we're in the World Series, and I got this team, I assembled them. Not anymore, buddy. You're out. And that's exactly what he deserved. I knew they were going to get him out. I didn't know it was going to be before Game 3, but hey, you get beat 12-3 last night. You lose opening game 5-4. You're supposed to be all that. You got the best strikeout rate. You strike out more people. You score more runs. You've got all this other stuff working. You're the best assembled machine baseball team in the history of the MLB. Not up in here. And I applaud management for the Houston Astros for doing this. When that story broke about a week ago, I'm thinking to myself, this guy ain't going to make it. At the end of the year, they're going to pull the rug out from under him. No, they did the right thing, Nick. They pulled the rug out of from under him today before Game 3.
And my take on this is it's just kind of convenient that they did this now. Because when did this incident take place?
After they won the championship against the Yankees last week.
Okay, so the him yelling and screaming took only place a week ago.
See, but the thing is that the women reporters were wearing domestic violence shirts, you know, supporting women. And he's looking at them yelling this across the clubhouse. Hey, you know, basically sticking it to them.
Yeah.
Because he has the power.
And I get that. I understand he's being an idiot and he's trying to basically instigate women.
He's showing them that he's got this and they don't.
And he's basically saying, "Hey, I'm glad we brought in a woman beater, basically, and here's it in your face."
Mm-hmm.
But my whole point is that it's just kind of convenient that they waited until they got blasted last night. Kind of takes off the shine away from the terrible L that they took in 2 games so far. And it kind of diverts attention now to something else.
Well, see, and I get your point, but unfortunately in this case, I don't think that that's why this went down like this. It happened less than a week ago. It happened a week ago. So it happens, and you have to decide. You got to get all the evidence, first of all. You have to be sure that this guy really said that stuff, and there's people that can come forth and back what she said. And there's too many people. So now what do you do? Do you wait? Do you suspend him now? Do you fine him and suspend him now? Or do you do what they did, which is the ultimate? Do you show him the door? Look, he's gone. He's either going to get suspended for a long time, get hit with a big fine, or if you want to change the face of things in your locker room and let female reporters come in there and feel comfortable, then you get him out of there. Or you don't allow him in the locker room. They did the right thing to me. The timing just happens to be what it is. Now, to the World Series. And I'll say this. Nick, I have to admit, I haven't bet the playoffs. I'm not going to bet because the last two games, I've enjoyed them as much as I've enjoyed any World Series games I can remember because I'm not in action. I don't care what the final score is after five innings, how many runs they have, who wins, who does this or that. I'm just watching some great baseball, man. That 5-4 game, they got Gerrit Cole, the best pitcher in baseball that was on a streak of 11 straight games with 10 strikeouts. Nobody can get you, and guess what? They beat him 5-4. Then they come back last night in a 2-2 great ball game. This game is, I'm like, this is great. And then all of a sudden, Suzuki comes up in the seventh inning, 2-2, and sit back, relax, and enjoy the seventh inning last night.
New catcher is Martin Maldonado after the Astros pinch hit Kyle Tucker for Robinson Chirinos.
And that's always a little dicey for a manager when he knows the pitcher-catcher combination's been clicking.
Here's one hammered in the left. Off the bat of Suzuki and gone. Nationals jump back on top. It's 3-2 here in the seventh. Hit big home run after big home run this year for Washington. None bigger than that.
You ain't kidding.
Listen to the clubhouse celebration. We'll get to this too later.
Four seam fastball, but middle just above the belt. He knew it. Verlander knew it. This crowd got quiet.
And they just kept pouring it on. They put six up in that spot, but Suzuki got it started. It was great to see him with his two sons afterwards in the media room talking about that was the most impressive and most cherished moment in his professional baseball career. He says, of all the home runs, of all the guys I've thrown out, trying to steal on me, this and that, nothing matched being able to do what I did in that particular moment. And they went on to win that ball game. Everything else, look, the Astros now are feeling the pressure, okay? You got Soto, Zim, Suzuki, Kendrick. I mean, all these guys, even Mark Eaton, it was a sighting yesterday. These guys are getting it done. Clutch hitting, a hot team. They've won eight in a row now. Schwarzer, Strasburg, and Abel Sanchez, who tomorrow night, who knows, he's a slight underdog here as they go home. And we'll see what happens. A lot of fun watching this, I have to admit. Just no complaints here. All right, now let's go to the NFL. This is the year of the backup QB in the NFL. Two future NFL Hall of Famer prospects, given the expression they might return this Sunday. Quarterback Pat Mahomes, who left last Thursday night in that 36 route over Denver with that dislocated right knee. He's been practicing all week. The dude's out there practicing. Practice, man. You believe it? It's like, okay, well, are you really going to play Patrick Mahomes this week in this matchup at, against the Packers at home? And what are your thoughts?
I've just never understood what a dislocated kneecap is. Isn't that what he suffered?
Yeah, and a kneecap comes out of place. Listen, I had my patella tendon ruptured where my kneecap from the bottom of my kneecap that snapped, and my kneecap rolled halfway up my thigh.
Wow.
And I had atrophy after that.
That sounds fun.
The scar is a pretty nice 9-incher.
Well, I've just never understood it. So I guess when you say it like that, then, yeah. Was it severe enough?
Not like mine.
It doesn't sound like it. Just even I actually was watching that game and you saw it when
they popped it back in too. They popped his knee back in place.
I don't know if I saw
when they got him up
part.
Off the ground. They popped his knee back in place so he could walk. but it's too chancy. It's like eggs. You don't know if they're going to crack if you step on them or not.
I don't know. He definitely needed help off the field and all that. But given how he's already made this turnaround and watching how he kind of limped off the field, it's not a shocker. I mean, he's a young, very young guy, and you can still heal pretty good at that age. So,
well, they're 5-2 right now. So, no, Sunday night he won't be playing. If he does, I'm shocked. They hold that division in the West. You've got the Raiders, the Broncos, Chargers. No threat. They're 5-2. They got a grip. They're good. The other quarterback that says, I want to compete. Reporters asked Drew Brees, you going to play this Sunday against the Cardinals? He says, quote, reply was, that's the plan. Well, Teddy Bear Bridgewater is 5-0, okay, since you went down. The Saints are 6-1 in that division. Also, Alvin Kamara, he's got the ankle and knee injury. Jared Cook, their tight end, he's got ankle. They didn't practice this yesterday, so they may not be in there.
They got a great defense, though, too.
Their defense has been the key. Here's what's going to happen with Drew Brees. I don't think they play him this weekend in their matchup against the Cardinals. However, they get a bye next week, week 9, and then week 10 is likely when he comes back.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You might as well wait. Atlanta. At this age, save him closer to the playoffs. So.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of the walking wounded, and also in the moment, starting quarterbacks and backups, let me give you a list of the replacement quarterbacks. It's almost a third of the whole league is playing backup quarterbacks right now. We mentioned Patrick Mahomes. Matt Moore is going to likely be the one. The Colts, Andrew Luck retired. Jacoby Brissett has been the man. Mm-hmm. He's all that in Indy. Mm-hmm. Saints Bridgewater, Teddy Bear for Breeze. Daniel Jones for Eli, replacement upgrading. Okay. Minshew, Gardner for Nick Foles went down. That was a shame. You get Nick Foles. Nick Foles just can't do it unless he's a backup. It's the way it works, right?
Yeah, right.
This is the key. What's going to happen with Kyle Allen and the Panthers? Cam Newton comes back. What do you do? Allen is 4-0.
You're going to get smacked by my Niners this weekend.
That's going to be fun. Your Niners got that D, man. Mm-hmm. They make you sweat when you watch them. Hell, they're that good. Dolphins going back to starter Ryan Fitzpatrick over Josh Rosen. Steelers, you know about Ben Roethlisberger, so Mason Rudolph and also Delvin Hodges. And the Titans, they're making a replacement this coming week, Tannehill and for Mariota, who just never really panned out. And then the Redskins, Case Keenum, the starter, of course, injured. Haskins or McCoy will be the replacement there. All right, we got a little time to jump into this before we get down to dope at 4:20. NBA and USA Voices versus China. And I talked about this on Monday. And Rockets GM Daryl Morey and what he tweeted out, those 7 words and everything. And then now Adam Silver's running to try to recover that $1 billion deal they had trying to put together with China over there. Yao Ming is now in the sights of Silver. He's going to have to get with him because he runs a Chinese basketball association. You got to get over there and basically kind of pat him on the back and slow things down. Mum should be the word. If you're Adam Silver, you send out a memo. Nobody says anything about China. They're a communist country. We're trying to deal with them. They don't need us. We need their money, okay? When you're dealing with communists, they don't give a rat's ass about what you think. Don't say nothing about the way they run their lives. It's a country where you can only have one child. If you have more than one child, you're going to prison. We're taking the other one away. Okay? That's China. They tell you what you're going to do. They dictate everything. If you don't do it, you're going to prison. Okay? And they've been in an uproar, the younger people over there, about being tried and moving everything to a certain city. Hey, we're finally moving. This feels good. We have a voice. We can actually speak like they do in other countries. Well, guess what? You say anything about the country. And for example, the second most powerful man on the planet, last night in a speech, he went after Nike and he also went after the NBA. And then after all that, he talked about how we still have a relationship with China here in the U.S. I'm talking about Mike Pence.
And far too many American multinational corporations have kowtowed to the lure of China's money and markets by muzzling not only criticism of the Chinese Communist Party, but even affirmative expressions of American values. Nike promotes itself as a so-called social justice champion. But when it comes to Hong Kong, It prefers checking its social conscience at the door. Nike stores in China actually removed their Houston Rockets merchandise from their shelves to join the Chinese government in protest against the Rockets general manager's seven-word tweet, which read, "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong." And some of the NBA's biggest players and owners who routinely exercise their freedom to criticize this country lose their voices when it comes to the freedom and rights of the people of China. In siding with the Chinese Communist Party and silencing free speech, the NBA is acting like a wholly owned subsidiary of that authoritarian regime.
Okay, there you go. Okay, now, I'm not getting into the political side of things, all right? Mike Pence is a very good speaker. He can speak, right? Some presidents and politicians are very good speakers, others aren't. He is very good. Unfortunately, in this case, he went on after that and said, well, we still have a relationship with China. We're going to keep it. Last time I checked, if you go into a store to pick up some whatnots and other things for your house, on the bottom of it, it reads made in China. It's been that way my whole life. It's going to be that way all of your lives. So why are you throwing hypocrisy out there and going after Nike and the NBA when the country is engaged with China? Let it go. It has no place for conversation in politics. In my opinion, you have a right, but why are you taking a shot at the NBA? We're so divided, I swear. You have the right to do it. You have the right to do it, but what you're doing is you're stepping on their game. Okay, it ain't helping you, but you're trying to put a hold against what the NBA and Nike's doing, yet we're in bed with them too. It's like sleeping with the devil. Devil must be good and bad, huh?
I was reading an article too. This is a little bit diverting from the NBA topic, but it's about China and their power altogether. Quantum computing is becoming a thing where quantum mechanics and quantum physics will actually now be integrated in computing. So we have supercomputers now, but these computers they're talking about are even more ridiculous. So with that said, we had to be worried about they're becoming a superpower with that and their potential military. So China could be the new America here in the next. My children that I have, they could be bowing down, not like literally bowing down, but you know how America has been the superpower for, yep, as long as we've been alive? That might not be it for much longer.
Look at all the people that are over there.
That's what I'm saying.
And they're curbing back their population. You can only have one child.
I used to joke that if you just gave each one of the Chinese and gave them a gun and dropped them off over here, well, we're clearly outnumbered, right?
Shut up.
Well, seriously, but we're outnumbered with just their money. You vote with your dollar. You have power with your money. Well, guess what? They have almost, over one-fifth of the population. So a lot of power over there. That's all I'm saying.
Wow. Well, anyway, I'm not dealing with the political side of it, and I don't have a problem with Mike Pence. And like I said, he's a very good speaker. I just think when you start picking topics of that nature, you're in bed with him too, okay? He's cheating on his wife, and so are you. You're sleeping with the same woman.
It is one ugly, big mess, gray matter, if you will. No black or white to any of this, really. I mean, is there?
Nope.
To me, this whole China deal is just a mess.
Well, it's a money grab, and the NBA has the right to do it, and that's where they are. Okay, we are going to look at tonight's games, and keep in mind, coming up at the bottom of the hour, Ken Thompson's going to talk a little college football, the game tonight in the World Series. But tonight, you got three games in the NBA, Atlanta at Detroit. Detroit is a 1.5-point favorite in 221. We'll see what happens here with Blake Griffin and company. Milwaukee and Giannis, they're at the Rockets. We'll see how Harden and Westbrook reunited down in Houston, if they could get some things done. And then the Clippers and the Dubs. The Dubs opening up their brand new $1.4 billion venue in San Francisco, not in Oakland,
Mm-mm.
the Chase Center.
Mm-mm.
I know. What do you do,
slap
man?
In the face,
what do you
of
do,
the
brother?
East Bay. Slap in the face and, to and the people says, of the East Bay.
And it says very commercial. People aren't saying Warriors. Warriors.
Oh, it's going to be a bunch of pomp asses and you know, snootiness with the San Francisco people. Sorry, I'm from San Jose, so whatever.
All right. All right, lighters up. It's 420.
And I've been same for a special occasion.
It's like a quarter pounder, man.
Be careful with that. Is it heavy stuff, man? Will it blow me away?
It's time now for Man, That Show Is Dope.
420 in the valley. Lighters up. Excuse me. Pass it. All right. This right here is dope. And you heard some of it. We played the highlights of that seventh inning last night when the Nationals actually got Suzuki in that home run. And they're in the dugout. And we'll try to back this up and give you a little sound of that when they're in the dugout celebrating. When the Nationals score runs, hit the big fly or get the lead, their dugout turns into a house of little leaguers. Every teammate has an individual, premeditated, personalized handshake with every other teammate. I remember when I was in high school, we used to do that on the baseball team. Everybody had their own personalized handshake, so it's good to see that nowadays. Now, manager Davey Johnson said last night after game 12-3 route, he said it began early in the season. It started on the field celebration. And he told them, no, we don't work like that here. Moving inside the dugout, you could be little leaguers. And that's exactly what they are.
You ain't kidding.
These are millionaires having fun like kids playing baseball. You know, they always said baseball was a kid's game.
I'm so jealous.
Hey, how much fun is that to watch?
I mean, I'm not jealous like a hater jealous, but I wanted to be a professional baseball player.
You.
I'm pretty sure much like pretty much 90% of the audience or, you know, 90% of the people who work in this building or at least in the sports department, you know what I mean?
Right.
But just to see that stuff, I mean, and to get paid the hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars that you do and to have the, like you said, the handshakes with each guy, the camaraderie, the special bond, that's awesome. If you ever were on a team, you know what that's like. You
right.
know, I'll take it a step further. I went to military school, and one of my roommates, we became real tight. You know what I mean? We were good friends. We hung out after even military school and stuff like that. We kept in touch. But while we were in military school, we had our own little military cadence, like synchronized.
Right.
Step, you know what I mean? Like a left, right, double time, triple step, you know, about face type stuff. And so that was like our little handshake. So, you know, that type of stuff is really cool. That's how you bond with another person.
It's nothing like having teammates. It's a brotherhood.
Exactly.
It's not just sports. It's anytime you put on a uniform and your teammates with someone else. It could be in a workplace, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you get enabled and you become personal with someone else, and then you have a gathering, maybe there's 4 or 5 and maybe more, like 25 like this, man, that right there, just watching that last night and hearing it, you're in your cars hearing that, these are grown men playing baseball, they get home runs, and this is what they do afterwards in the Nats dugout. That's dope.
So local here, teacher Ben Nguyen, he was given $25,000. Did you hear about this?
What you got?
Well, he was recognized for being an outstanding in the classroom. He received $25,000. The Milken Ecuador, Ecuador educator. Hello. I called it Ecuador. I can't read from across the room here.
I saw his class, though.
The Milken Educator Award this morning. The teacher was unaware this was happening. He teaches grades 9 through 12 at Sunrise Mountain High School. It looks like he teaches some sort of robotics class. And so anyway, there's only like 40 teachers who get recognized in the whole nation.
That's pretty huge.
The whole nation. And he was one of them. So Ben Nguyen, local here at Sunrise. What was it? Sunrise Mountain High School.
That is
very dope.
You know, and the thing is, I saw the report. They're in the gym. And Sisolak is there, right? Our governor. And you know, he doesn't know he's getting a reward. So all of a sudden, they call his name. They send this big award. Then they call his name, and the place just erupts. And he comes running down. It's almost like the price is right.
Yeah.
So that is dope. That's good dope.
You know what else is dope is if I could read. I said it.
That's all good.
No, real quick. I've said it every time I think I'm on your show, especially this season, because the Niners just keep winning. But come on, man. My Niners are dope. They're dope AF.
So you're going to steal a dope on me. I like it.
Well, and the fact
You got the floor.
The fact that we got Emmanuel Sanders, too. I mean, I don't know how much he has left in the tank. He's 30 on the, you know, the plus
special
side of 30.
Teams.
But he brings veteran leadership, hopefully, to the receiving core so he can teach some of the younger guys like Pettis and Goodwin. So I'm looking forward to this because, you know, we don't have a lot of pieces that we're missing. Doesn't look like it as far as, you know, the 49ers go.
You stole the dope. I like it. And the thing is this. When you have a team like that where defense dominates, and let's face it, I mean, Joey Ball is all he has to do is be serviceable because your defense is intimidating. They basically, when Cleveland went in there, you heard what they were saying about their quarterback, huh? Baker Mayfield, they said he was peeing pants.
This is the defensive line that I thought it would be, you know what I mean? Or a lot of people, I'm sure, we thought it would be, is just wrecking shop, you know what I mean? Just terrorizing. Mm-hmm. It's we went from the Navarro Bowman and the Patrick Willis, the just indestructible middle linebacking crew, to now just bringing it up front, and you don't want none. I mean, you just don't want none. We bring four. That's all we have to bring is four, and that's it.
Your general manager, when he played at Tampa, he was a hitting machine. So he's bringing in personnel that likes to get pretty physical. That's dope.
It's dope defense.
That's a good dope. This is very, very sad dope.
Uh-oh.
The 24/7 Wall Street published a list of the 48 major cities in the U.S. with the growing most homeless populations. Okay?
The sanctuary cities.
So 48 cities. So I'm going to give you the top 10 from 10 down to 1, and I'm going to tell you where Vegas falls in there, and then something going on with our law.
Pretty high.
Number 10 is your hometown, homie. San Jose. San Jose's number 10 as far as, and I'm not having fun saying this. I'm just, you know, giving the information.
And I hate to say it, too, but it's the sanctuary city. Some cities will not have it and tolerate it and kick you out, so they're forced to go other places.
Right.
And I know there's places like the suburbs of San Jose, like Los Gatos and Saratoga and a lot of these others. I'm not positive that they are they kick them out, but I'm pretty sure that they are higher class and they will not have homeless hanging out.
I remember years ago, I was covering the Rebels. They were in St. Louis. I didn't see a single homeless person. I was in there for like 3 days. I'm like, what? There's downtown none.
Yeah, they shuffle them out.
Number 9 is Dallas. My hometown, San Diego's number 8, and down there on 16th and Market Street, that whole area is a whole community of homeless people.
The beach cities up and down California.
It's terrible. San Antonio, 7. Philly is number 6. Phoenix, I'm talking about
that's cold.
The top 10 growing homeless cities in case you just tuned in. Philly, 6. Phoenix is 5. Think about how hot it is in the summer in Phoenix. 120.
Yeah,
Houston.
Would you almost rather deal with the heat than the cold, though, if you're
I would,
living
I would
on
not
streets?
Want to deal with the heat.
I can't deal with the cold
I can't
myself.
Deal with the heat. Houston is number 4. How about this? Chicago is number 3. They have approximately 5,430 homeless people. L.A. is number 2. So the top 3 cities with the most people have the
sense.
Most. L.A. has an estimated 4 million residents, 50 million homeless people. 50,000.
I was going to say, holy moly.
50,000, I beg your pardon. Now, New York is number 1, as you expected.
Yeah.
Very sad. 8.5 million people, 80,000 homeless people. Vegas is number 28 on that list of 48. So we're right in the middle, which isn't good. Approximately, Clark County, they say there's 6,083 homeless people. That's more than Chicago. Now, the Strip Ordinance and Fremont Street Experience, you know, they're coming out with this new ordinance. They're going to vote on it. If homeless people, if it passes, if you're homeless and you're on the Strip or you're on Fremont Street, you're going to jail. Okay? Think about this. If you're a woman and you have your children and you're walking the street and you're a tourist and there's homeless people sitting in the street, what are you going to do? Walk in the street with your kids and get run over by a car? Foremaster Lane is awful. I have a friend of mine, and we haven't done it this year. We'll do it probably next month in December. Twice a year, I call him Doc. He has a lot of stuff, like shoes, women's stuff, suitcases, just stuff that he doesn't use, new stuff. We load his truck up, and we go into Foremaster Lane twice a year, and people line up, and we give away his stuff. He takes me in there because I have order, you know, and I've been doing this thing for a while, so good for him, and it's sad. That's a very sad dope, unfortunately.
Not dope.
Yeah, not dope. Yeah. So there you have it. Lighters down. We'll step away when we get back. Ken Thompson at Ken Thompson 87. He's going to break down the World Series coming up tomorrow, the football game tonight, key college games, and week 8 in the NFL across the street here on Power Play. Back on the mean streets of Vegas, 432 in the Valley here on Thursday. Thursday night football coming up. A pretty good barrage of college football games. Also the NFL and World Series game number 3 coming up tomorrow. Ken Thompson at Ken Thompson 87 here on the phones with us right now. Ken, how are you, brother?
See, my brother, always good, baby. On this side of the turf, and that's all that really matters now.
Hey, Ken, we're going to call you right back. You're muffled right now. We'll give you a call right back, brother. All right? We'll call you right back. Yep, we're getting right back up. You know, here's the thing. Tonight's football game with the Redskins and the Vikings. And the Vikings are a huge favorite, 16.5-point favorite. The total in that game, 42. I haven't really been betting these games as of late. I've been saving my money. We got kind of clobbered in baseball this summer, so I'm kind of holding back a bit. We got Ken back up again. Ken, let's check you.
Hi, I'm good, man. Am I good?
You know what? It could be something on the board. Last time we had a caller and the board had an issue on it. So we'll try Ken back here in a second. Meanwhile, let me jump into another thing while Nick tries to get things adjusted for us here. We're talking about backup quarterbacks in the NFL. And the thing about it is, you really never know. The backup quarterback position in the NFL is probably the most coveted position of all sports, right? Especially if you are playing with the Patriots or the Chargers or a team where the quarterback never gets injured. All right, give it a thought. Okay, the Patriots, you're winning, you're getting chips, you're collecting rings, you're playing behind Tom Brady, you never get a sniff. But when you have your grandchildren, you're telling stories about how you ended up winning these World Series, these Super Bowls, right? Hey, you don't have to talk. Well, how were you in there, Grandpa? Oh, we took care of business. Your story is you just show them the rings. You ain't got to talk about the games. That was so long ago. Took a couple of hits. Can't remember it. Backup quarterbacks in the NFL, and we mentioned 10 that are now starting in the NFL, and that's almost a third of the entire slate of teams. You got 32 teams. That is the best job you could have in the NFL, is a backup quarterback job. You're going to get paid not like a starting quarterback. Like if you're a backup quarterback and you're getting $8 million, you're doing fine, right?
You're chilling.
Yep. All right, let's try one more time. Ken Thompson at Ken 87. Ken, let's check you.
Third time's a charm?
Yeah.
No good.
There you go. All right. Yeah, it was the board.
Is that better?
Yeah, you're no, it wasn't you. We just had a technical issue inside. Appreciate you, bro. How are you, man?
You know what, C? I'm good, baby. As long as you're picking me up loud and clear, it's always great to talk to you on Thursdays, bud.
Awesome. All right, let's start with the football game tonight. Vikings, huge favorite over the Redskins. Any problems? Give us a number and your thoughts.
Yeah, you know what? I can't lay 16.5, Steve. I'm not going to touch the game. Without Adam Thielen, that's a key part of the lineup. I know Diggs is excelling, but, you know, I just can't do it. It's a lot of points in the NFL. I know Minnesota's a great home field advantage. Redskins still going to come to play. You know, I don't know, you know, what they can bring. The offense, we look at what we saw last, and, of course, they didn't score, but that was in a monsoon. So, end of the day, they end up getting the cover against the Niners. Still playing with some heart. I'll stay away. I think it's too many points, but I respect Minnesota and that home field advantage. I think it's one of the top four in the NFL.
All right, that's tonight's game. Then Sunday, there's at least four really good games. We'll look at three of them right now. And this right here is a surprise. I mean, the Buffalo Bills, and they're a favorite at home against the Eagles. This matchup right here is, to me, one of the most intriguing because you really don't know what's going to happen. And they got a small number on it. Buffalo's like a 1.5-point favorite, 43.5. The Eagles, when they play well, they look really good. And when they're putting pressure on a quarterback, they can really scramble him and take him out of his comfort zone and move him off his spot. But can they do that to the Buffalo Bills?
I don't know, but can Carson Wentz be the guy that Philadelphia thought he was when they let Nick Foles go? So, I mean, that's the thing. We're seeing Wentz crumble under pressure. He looked lousy against Dallas and really hasn't looked great all year. So unless he starts producing on offense, I don't think it really matters what the defense does. I mean, it's always good if you have DeSean Jackson back in the lineup and even Sproles, both those guys questionable. But, you know, there's enough talent on that offense, but they, you know, it always seems like Ertz is really the one guy that's open. Other than that, they struggle for points, and if they don't get it together now, they're going to be in a lot of trouble because there's going to be no wild card coming out of the NFC East, that's for sure. I would think they better get it together, otherwise Dallas could take off with that division.
And that's a very good point. We're talking with Ken Thompson at Ken Thompson 87. Only one team. We know it's not going to be the Redskins or Giants. It's either going to be the Eagles or the Cowboys in the east of the NFC coming out. So the Eagles need to start getting busy now. You already lost to Dallas straight up. Not only did you lose, you got pummeled. So following that loss, what can you do against a very promising upcoming young team that's starting to build a low personality and character in the Buffalo Bills on the road? We'll see what happens in that one. Ken, another big game, and our good friend in here, Nick Nice, he is a huge Niner fan. Defense rocks in the NFL. Carolina's defense has been pretty good. They've got a situation now with a quarterback, and Cam Newton's been out. His replacement is 4-0. Niners' defense has given up, what is it, 11 or less points per game. They're the best defense in the league. Niners 5.5-42 at home to Carolina. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, when you get a defensive line like that and Bosa making his presence felt, that, you know, that complements the rest of that defense. And that's the thing, when you're that stingy, you know, Garoppolo and company, they don't have to put up a ton of points, but you've got guys, you know, like Breida that can run the ball, and you've got a solid receiving core. You pick up Sanders. I think that's a good pickup. People go, oh, that's not such a big deal. I like him. Veteran leadership, a guy that's hungry to win a title, I think that's a good pickup. I think San Francisco, they could be the team to beat in the NFC. We're still looking at them, you know, kind of lightly, because the schedule hasn't been that difficult, but I'm not going against them right here. I think they're a solid squad. I do respect Carolina, the way they're playing with the new quarterback coming off the bye as well. They've got their feet under them. So, you know, a lot of people are going to play Carolina, a lot of sharp people. It's one I'll stay away from. Just check his out, and McGlinchey on the line. So I'll stay away, but I can't go against San Francisco right now. And I like the way Carolina's playing as well. They stepped up and answered the bell after Cam went out.
Yeah, and also what you're seeing with the 49ers and other young teams that are coming up, building strong defenses with the core through the draft process, those are teams that are successful. Remember the Bears back in 85, the Ravens with Ray Lewis and company, all the teams, and even the Giants teams back when they were getting it done, when they beat the Patriots in those 2 years, 07 and 11 in the Super Bowls, defenses, when they start to build and they come together, they could be a nightmare. We'll see if the Niners can keep that rolling. And then the Cleveland Browns going to New England. Sometimes, though, when it looks like it's too easy, could this be too easy? The Patriots almost a 2-touchdown favorite and 45 at home to Cleveland.
Yeah, if it is 2 touchdowns, I'll be a sucker. I'll take the Brownies, man. I mean, if it gets to 13.5, I might buy it up. It is a lot of points. They still have a pretty solid offense. Remember, the game against San Francisco, that looks like a blowout, but, you know, first quarter and a half, they were going up and down the field. They just squandered, you know, shot themselves in the foot with the interception that got returned out to midfield when they were going in. It's not a bad Cleveland team, not as bad as they look. And, again, 2 touchdowns in the NFL compared to 2 touchdowns in college football, much different. I'll look at Cleveland, despite the Patriots being unbeaten right now. And, again, that Patriot defense, very, very solid. We always look at their offense, but that defense is outstanding. But still the schedule, pretty light. Outside of Buffalo, is there really a contending team that the Pats have played so far? They have not.
Hey, let's squeeze in the World Series coming up tomorrow with Game 3 before we go to college football. I have 4 or 5 games there. Astros and Zach Greinke, they got to get this one against Anibal Sanchez and the Nats. I believe Greinke is about .140, total 8 under, Nats up 2-0. This team right here has caught fire. They've won 8 games in a row. They were nobodies. Davey Martinez, early in the year, their skipper was conversation of being fired. Now they're partying in the dugout. They've been doing it all year when they get victories, and they're having fun. They're like little leaguers having a good time playing baseball.
See, I will tell you this, man. We remember the run a couple years ago when the Capitals took out the Vegas Golden Knights in the finals. That team, I talked about this on my show, down 2-0. First round against Columbus, they find a way to come back and get game 3 in Columbus when they trailed that 2-0. So they lost the first 2 in D.C. They're down 2-0 in game 3. They win that game. They go on, win 4 straight in that series, and then they never look back. They go on, beat the Golden Knights 4-1. This has a similar feeling with the Nationals. Let's remember, they get into the playoffs, they get into the postseason, they're playing great ball, but they're down 4-1 in the eighth inning at home against Milwaukee. Milwaukee makes some mistakes, ball gets past the right fielder, next thing they win. Then they're down 2 games to the Dodgers, come back, win that, go on, get that momentum. Once they got past the Dodgers, clear sailing, it looks like, because they blow out St. Louis 4-0, and here they are, take the first two in Houston. And Anibal Sanchez, let's remember, he pitched a gem. Greinke has not been that hot so far in the postseason, so you're betting on the name. Highest-priced guy on that Astro payroll is Greinke. It's ridiculous what he makes per inning. He may not last five. The way this national team is hitting right now, home crowd behind him, I'm not going against him, man. And my buddy Chuck, 35-1 on 300 large. Oof. I'm just going to stand behind him when he's dropping some chips out of the counter over there.
Nice. He's Ken Thompson at Ken Thompson 87. Here's the thing about pressure. And the Astros are totally up against the wall dealing with the pressure and the stress. It could work one of two ways. One, because you're the favorite and you're supposed to be all that, and you're down to nothing, the pressure could get to you. The other thing, this could be in their favor, they're leaving home, okay? And sometimes you can shed that pressure when you get away from family members, people wanting to get tickets and this and that and all this, and now you get to go away from home, down to nothing, where you could perhaps bond. We'll see which way that works here for the Astros. But the Nats, on the other hand, they could be laying in ambush. They've been really good. All right, Ken, let's go to the grids and talk some college football. Your favorite, brother. Let's get started. Penn State, Michigan State. The Nittany Lions still unbeaten. 6.5 and 43. They're at Michigan State against Sparty.
Yeah, and Sparty's coming off the bye. This is a game D'Antonio's got to get because this team has really looked atrocious at times. Now, they did play a pretty good 2.5 quarters at the Horseshoe against Ohio State, but they also were miserable against Wisconsin on the road. This game at home, again, off the bye. Lewerke's got to get the ball out to Stewart and White early, open things up. You've got a great nucleus on defense. Willekes, one of the best defensive linemen in the country, and Bocci, one of the better linebackers. So you're intact as far as defense. Now, can you slow down Clifford, get after him the way Michigan did in the second half in Happy Valley? Penn State jumped up 21-0. They had to hold on for dear life, and if Ronnie Bell doesn't drop that fourth down pass from Patterson, they probably go to OT, it looked like. Now, Penn State does have K.J. Hamler, and he is by far the best athlete on the field. He's the guy that made the difference in the Michigan game. He gets behind defenses. Sparty's got to know where he is at all times. I double him up, keep an eye on Freiermuth, the tight end, and then take my chances with the running game because Slade and Kane and Brown, I don't think, are the best trio there for Penn State. Also, Shaka Tony, their defensive end, he's a little bit banged up with the knee. If he doesn't go, that's a major get for Michigan State. They still have Gross Matos, but if Tony's even 80%, that helps Sparty out a lot. I like Sparty to cover the number. I think they got a good chance to win the game, but they cannot get out of the gate slowly like they did at home against Arizona State or some of the other teams they played in East Lansing.
Speaking of not getting over the fence and out the gate, Wisconsin Badgers last week. Boy, this right here will set up to be the game of the year in the Big Ten. Wisconsin and Ohio State, but the Badgers couldn't bring in their part, even though Taylor did his thing. He got the TDs and also went over 100 again. Ohio State, though, waiting at home, now over 14.5 points, your total 49.5. By losing that game also, the Badgers went from number 6 in the rankings in AP all the way down to 13th. Your thoughts, can they rebound here up at the Horseshoe?
Well, it's going to be tough for him. First off, as good as Taylor was, they're up 9 points, about 6 minutes to go, 5-6 minutes to go. He fumbles the ball on the 24-yard line of Illinois. That gave life to the Illini. They get the touchdown. And then an inexcusable call, I thought, offensively. And Paul Chris, he's the head coach, but he's the guy that's popping in those plays. Why will you have Jack Cohn throw the ball when you're in Illinois territory on a 3rd and 5? Look, if you don't get it, you punt it, you pin them deep with a few seconds to go inside their own 10, 15-yard line. Instead, the interception, they come down, they hit the field goal, chip shot field goal, and all of a sudden your season short-circuited. Now, Wisconsin, despite being that 31-point favorite, and people look at that, I think they still have a chance to get to the playoffs. So they have to just put that game behind them. They've got to go in, they've got to beat Ohio State, and then they've got to take care of business against everybody else, including an undefeated Minnesota team, get back, play Ohio State again more than likely, take them out again. Then you have a chance, but you got to go one game at a time, and it's not easy this year going into the Horseshoe, that's for sure, because Justin Fields, to me, is the real deal. I think he got tested big time by Sparty's defense, so I think he'll be ready. Jim Leonard, one of the better defensive coordinators in the country for the Badgers. He'll try and dial up some blitzes and get Fields off his game, force some turnovers. But when you have J.K. Dobbins and you've got a quartet of receivers that are pretty darn good, and then you have Chase Young on the other side of the ball, boy, good luck, Wisconsin. If you don't get out to a good start and you fall behind two scores, you're not coming back against Ohio State. They could blow them out. So it's very important. You'll know, I think, 10 minutes in whether Wisconsin's going to play this game and it's going to be close, or Ohio State's going to blow them out the door.
That's Ken Thompson at KenThompson87. Next up, good matchup in the SEC. LSU took care of Michigan State, Mississippi State last week, rolled them, and their defense looked good. And on the other side, you had Auburn. They waxed Arkansas 51-10 that final. So Auburn now going to LSU, the number two team in the nation. LSU just over 10.5 points, 59. Your thoughts on this big matchup in the SEC, Ken?
Well, as good as Florida's defense is, and then they're darn good, they were able to beat Auburn. But I just think that, LSU, that's the best team they've gone against. That score is deceiving. They get the win in the cover. Florida ends the game on the 3-yard line. Florida throws a late interception in the end zone. So it's a 14-point spread, but Florida was right in that game. Auburn, to me, their front seven is better than Florida's front seven. Their defensive line with Derrick Brown and Davidson and Big Cat Bryant, Truesdell, those guys, to me, are the best defensive line in the country. Utah's pretty good. But then you got Britt and McClain, pretty good linebackers as well. I think Auburn's going to get after Joey Burrow. And Joe Burrow right now, the favorite to win the Heisman. And remember, he was 200-1 to start the season. But you've got to take Burrow off his mark. If you watch back the Texas game, there was a key play, 3rd and 17, a one-score game, and Burrow's flushed out. He moves up. He's just about to get clobbered, but he gets the ball out. Ball's caught and then taken for a touchdown down the sideline. That changed that game completely. He was literally an instant away from being sacked on a 3rd and 17. Look, give them credit. They're unbeaten. I love Eddie O. I like LSU. And they do get Terrace Marshall back, which is key, because Jefferson and Chase with Marshall, you got that trio. That helps Burrow. And then Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the running back, outstanding as well. This is going to be a good game, but I'm not giving 10.5 points to Auburn. In fact, I'll take the points. Even though Booby Whitlow's out in the backfield for the Tigers, you still have Cam Martin. And Joey Gatewood needs to get in there. He's the backup quarterback for Knicks, but he's a guy that can run the ball real well. Remember, they turned it over 3 times at Florida. Couple picks, one in the end zone, 3 picks, but one in the end zone was key. I think maybe Malzahn learned a little bit from that. Use your other quarterback. And keep an eye on a kid, a wide receiver, Anthony Schwartz. This kid has a few catches, but he also has a bunch of end-arounds, and he's very fast. They try to get him the ball whatever way they can. He could be a difference for the Auburn Tigers as they go face the LSU Tigers. It's a day game in Baton Rouge. Don't be fooled by the mystique of Baton Rouge at night, because the Tigers are pretty good there in the daytime. They're 8-1 in their last 9.
He's Ken Thompson at KenThompson87 here on the show Power Play. Could this be, I know in the pros it doesn't matter. In the pros, every week you're studying and you're watching film and you're only concerned about what's in front of you. But in college, it could be a sandwich game, as we would call it, because next week LSU, they're at Bama. Could this be a game where they're unfocused and looking towards the Tide?
Yeah, I think they got a bye. They have a bye before the Bama
okay.
game.
Okay. Okay.
So they're good there. Now, you talk about a sandwich game. It's Oregon at home against Wazoo. They're laying 14. First off, Wazoo's covered 9 straight in that series. And also, Oregon comes off the come-from-behind win against Washington, where they were down 10 with 6 minutes to go. And they go to USC next week. So this is a major sandwich game. They better not overlook Leach's boys, or they will be out of the playoff for sure. Right now, they're still in the playoff hunt because of Wisconsin losing. And if other teams start dropping, remember, Oregon's only loss is that game that they led for 59 minutes and 51 seconds, the opener at Jerry's house against Auburn. So it's also key for Oregon to hope that, a team like Auburn goes into Baton Rouge and keeps their own playoff hopes alive by knocking off LSU. Let's look at Auburn, though. If they knock off LSU and then they beat Bama at home in the Iron Bowl, we're not talking about LSU or Bama. We're talking about Auburn, believe it or not.
Nice. He's a walking computer. Ken Thompson in his hip pocket. He's got all the games lined up. No, here's a sandwich game right here. I love it. Hey, we got 2 more games to look at here, Ken. Michigan at home to Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish favored by 1-51, and Harbaugh has struggled. Let's face it, the second half, his team played hard against Penn State, but they were already done. What does he have to do to – is his job in jeopardy at all, or does he own the city back there?
Here's the thing. I mean, you're hearing rumblings that he may go back to the NFL. And see, here's the thing. They weren't done. I mean, that's the thing. I thought, because I had money on Penn State, I thought they were done. Down 21-0, they look shell-shocked in a whiteout. But here it is. I mean, Shea Patterson stays the course, and on the fourth down and goal, instead of being flushed out or taking off like he normally did in the past and just get out and start running, he stayed there. He flips a pass to Ronnie Bell right there in the wickets. It goes right through his arms. I felt bad for Ronnie Bell. Ronnie Bell's my favorite receiver from Michigan. I think he atones himself big time. I think they're going to try and get him the ball. But Nico Collins, Tarik Black, Donovan Peoples-Jones, you've got a quartet of receivers that are starting to play well. Charbonnet a little bit banged up, but Haskins stepped up in the backfield. Uchi's an outstanding senior on the defensive side of the ball from Michigan. He has really taken reins there. Hudson and Glasgow, a couple senior linebackers as well, have excelled. So I'm looking for Michigan to get it right. This is a huge game because Notre Dame comes off the bye. But let's look at USC going into Notre Dame. They came back and dominated the second half there and darn near won that game, lost by a field goal in South Bend. The Irish had to hold on for dear life and actually got a gift personal foul call on a roughing the passer that was absolutely bogus. Irish have to use their tight end, Cole Kmet, one of the best, and Tony Jones Jr., I think Michigan's going to be all over him, force Book to throw the ball. They don't have the speed receiving core that Michigan's got. Michigan's going to test those corners. I know the money's going towards Notre Dame. My money's on Maize and Blue.
Hey, Ken, we've got like 1 minute. A quick look at San Diego State UNLV. San Diego State coming into Sam Boyd, 13-point favorites and 45.
Yeah, I'm hoping the Rebs get it right. Really deceiving game last week. Five turnovers tells the difference. They both had 21 first downs. They only got outgained by 70 yards against Fresno. I think Oblad has a nice game. Tight end Noah Bean comes up big again, and Williams going to run it well in the backfield. 2 years in a row, we're going to beat San Diego State. Beat them last year in San Diego. Going to beat them. I'll be there.
You know, if they win this game, I mean, look, they have a chance for Tony Sanchez to get to six and perhaps save his gig and get to a bowl game.
I'm with you, baby. Let's go, Tony. Get it done, baby.
I like it. Hey, let the folk know where they can find you, Ken.
At SportsX Radio, at Ken Thompson 87. Monday through Friday, SportsX Radio, right here in the great city of Las Vegas. C. Williams, you rock, brother.
Appreciate you, my friend.
All right.
All right. That's Ken Thompson at Ken Thompson 87. A lot of fun today. Glad you could join us. By the way, on the way home, just remember today is National Bologna Day. When you get home, make yourself a bologna and cheese sandwich.
Hogwash.
What?
Hogwash. Instead of saying, that's a bunch of bologna.
When's the last time you had a bologna sandwich?
Probably when I was four.
I can't remember the last time I had a... Look, I've had salami. I've had ham, turkey, you name it.
Bologna is just a big hot dog.
No,
that's all it is.
It's beef.
You know what I'm saying is it's the same thing as a hot dog. It's just bigger in diameter. You know what I mean? Or radius.
But it's not pork. It's beef.
No, I'm not necessarily talking about what's actually inside, but it's pretty much the same thing as a hot dog. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying.
The process of it all, it's just a big hot dog.
But a hot dog tastes better.
And then they slice it up.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm off. Thanks for letting me be part of the show.
No mayo, please. Do you eat mayo? God.
No.
You got some brother in you, too.
Ten seconds.
All right. Thanks to Ken Thompson. Also to Nick Nice. I'm C. Williams. Chins up high. Guards up high. Chins down low. Power up. Power out.